Welcome to this latest building podcast. I'm Chloe McCulloch, editor at Building. Today, the Construction Leadership Council is holding a summit with over 100 chief executives from across the construction sector to discuss Brexit contingency plans. The summit is looking at the impact on the overall market, UK border implications, projects currently on site. It's a crucial time for the industry. You'll hear from key industry figures in this podcast, including Mark Reynolds, Chief Executive at Mace, Noble Francis, Economics Director at the Construction Products Association, and Richard Steer, Chairman at Consultant Gleeds. Thanks for joining us. But first, I'm joined by Dave Rogers, Building's news editor. And so, Dave, you know Mark Reynolds well. He's concerned. His big concern is labour shortages. Is that right?
Labour, and I think particularly materials, though.
Yeah.
And actually, sort of, there's a lot of just-in-time delivery to sites, and a lot of the facades are from overseas. So I think contractors have issues with what's going to happen if there's a no deal and how they're going to get through customs and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I think that's the big issue. I think that's probably a bigger issue than labour, actually.
Yeah, I mean, the CLC has been very at pains to say that it's not a no-deal Brexit summit, but clearly that is the scenario. That's the worst-case scenario in terms of products and materials. And when we spoke to Noble Francis from the Construction Products Association, you know, they were, you know, they've put out their forecast for 2019, but that's showing a decline in their forecast. But
that's an orderly Brexit.
That's on an orderly Brexit. And I think in what they're going to say to the summit today and what Noble Francis told us was that under a no deal, we're looking at a recession, basically.
Yeah.
The figures on that forecast are quite alarming.
Yeah. I think what's interesting about this summit is a lot of people want to sort of share ideas and tips on what others are doing. I think some people might put aside differences.
Yeah, well, I mean, apparently the CLC made the decision to convene this summit just before Christmas.
Yeah.
So they must have been getting to that point where they were thinking, well, if the uncertainty continues, there's no clarity on this issue, we've actually got to put something together to help firms that maybe haven't done contingency planning on their own to share ideas and, like you say, put aside some of those rivalries and think about what does the sector need to do to remain healthy to get through this sort of, well, the uncertainty of these immediate weeks where politically everything's up in the air.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And I think it's a lot of the big sites, particularly those in London. You know, look, there are firms that are stockpiling stuff. There's no doubt stockpiling's going on. And I think warehouses are getting pretty full with stuff. You know, we did a story last week about Ed Vasey saying, you know, prepare for no deal because...
Yeah, and that will have an impact on just-in-time delivery and all of those things. I think we're talking to Mark Reynolds from Mace, Noble Francis from the CPA and Richard Steer from Gleeds, and they're all, you know, very knowledgeable and can talk about the impact that would have on project costs, which is what it comes down to in the end. Costs on projects are going to go up.
Yeah, definitely. And they also, the other thing as well is, like, these jobs could end up being delayed by however long. Contractors would be worried about that because obviously they would then have to, maybe penalty charges might kick in. Yeah, that's another issue. And I think, you know, the last thing contractors want is for sites to grind to a halt. The big thing I think contractors will also be doing, the main contractors, is asking what's going on with their supply chain. I think that is happening already, but their subcontractors, they'll be asking them about resources, in terms of labour and also the materials.
Thanks for that, Dave. Let's hear what our leading industry experts had to say in the lead up to the summit. Here's Mark Reynolds. He is Chief Executive of Mace, one of the UK's largest contractors, and also leads on skills at the CLC.
So the CLC conference was born really from a short discussion that Greg Craig and I had, John Manzoni at the Cabinet Office, We attended a meeting.
Greg Craig's chief exec of Skanska, isn't he? And John Manzoni is, what is he?
Chief exec of Cabinet Office.
Right.
And they were explaining what measures the government were taking in order to plan for various scenarios leading up to Brexit, leading up to the 29th of March. So one of the comments they made was actually to plan for the worst and hope for the best, which Greg, I and John had a follow-up conversation, and we were discussing what we were doing from individual company perspectives, and it was pretty clear that we couldn't do this individually.
And just as a time scale, when was all this? Was this just before Christmas then?
Yeah, so we had the meeting with Cabinet Office on the 14th of December.
Right.
So literally a few days later, we had a few phone calls leading up to Christmas. We agreed the broad agenda and what we were trying to achieve. And then we set out the introductory notices and events and hold the date to the industry, basically the senior people, trade federations, institutions.
Yeah. What are the main concerns for you and your peers about A, Brexit, and B, if we leave without a deal, Brexit?
Well, everyone always talks about immigration and people and the freedom of movement. I'll come back to that because I think whilst it's important, the short-term burning platform is really about movement of goods, both exports and imports. And if we find that we are not able to import or imports get slowed, but just take our three big commodities being timber, aluminium and steel coming to UK being delayed for 4 weeks on a construction project, on a major infrastructure project, that delay is just going to impact on the project. Now, the cost of that ripples through the whole supply chain. It ripples through the supplier, the tier two, the manufacturer, through into the tier one, through to the clients. So we could, and the contracts that are in place, both government contracts and private sector contracts, are very onerous on the supply chain. So if I just look at it from a Mace point of view, we've got circa £1.2 billion worth of work, and if that's delayed 4 weeks, all of it across the board, we could see damages in the order of £10 million and loss of profit of prelims.
Yeah, so they would, the damages, and you'd be liable for those
damages.
We'd
be liable. Contractually, we are liable.
Yeah.
So it's actually the short-term issue is everything being slowed down. The movement of goods is absolutely crucial. So we need to understand where we're at risk with what materials and how we can overcome that. So one of the things is understanding what ports, where we have flexibility in the ports, where we've got risk in the transport systems, and how we can overcome and address those risks.
And if you could you have a situation where sites just grind to a halt?
Possibly. I mean, I don't think anyone knows that. There will always be examples where critical materials are delayed. And I use the example that was first given to me by Rolls-Royce, was, we have a very short supply chain, everything's on just-in-time. I can't finish an engine until I've got all of the components and all of the materials. It's no different for us.
Yeah.
And we would suffer those delays if we can't put things in place around buffering material storage or something.
I mean, you've mentioned some of the types of products or materials, but which bits of a job? I'm thinking facades might be one, and that comes a lot from the EU, doesn't it?
Frame.
Yeah.
Reinforcement steel.
Yeah.
Facades. Over 75% of the materials is actually produced in the UK. It's just under 25%, which is imported. And of that 25% that's been imported, 60% is from the EU and 40% from non-EU countries.
Right.
So we're dealing with 25% of the materials coming into UK. That's where the risk lies.
But that's a significant figure, though, isn't it? It's still
Some of the other things we also need to be mindful of is that some of our materials are exported, then form part of the manufacturing process overseas, and then come back in imported goods.
Right.
So we may find that some of our export goods actually slow fabrication and production, particularly of aluminium, coming back into the country as fabricated material.
There's the tariff situation as well, isn't there? If you have a no deal, is it going to cost more?
What's actually hit the industry more in the last 2 years is the devaluation of the pound.
Yeah.
So currency devaluation, you know, over the last 2 years has been, you know, in the order of 20%. So that has been absorbed already. But if we have another drop, it's unclear. I mean, it's just the uncertainty, isn't it?
Yeah.
So people don't know how to plan or price.
How much of your sort of strategy planning and thinking is this taking up of your time at the moment?
In the last month, this has probably taken a week of my time, personally.
Right. I'll come to Labour in a moment, but do you think you'll get any sort of certainty over the next few weeks, months on this? Or is this something that's going to just keep recurring for firms like yourselves over the next 2-3 years?
Who can predict exactly where it's going? But let's just have a scenario where there isn't, that's the worst case, a no deal scenario. Then we would almost certainly incur some form of delays, whether it's days or weeks, in which case that's the risk to all of the industry.
Yeah.
That's the materials.
Yeah.
If it's a scenario where it's being delayed, then we could still have that delay, that impact in 6 to 12 months' time.
Yeah.
So again, we ought to start planning for that and at least being aware where the priorities need to be focused.
Yeah. Yeah. And on labour, is that as big a concern at the moment, or is that...
That's not the short-term issue.
No.
So the major issue is the medium-skilled workers, of which a large proportion of the London workforce sit within the plus £30,000 threshold.
Right.
Which means we've got five, six years. So you've got the two-year to 2021, where then they've got... current status remains, and then there's the visa process that takes them for another further 5 years. My concern after that is the current way things are written at the moment, the medium skilled workforce are going to have a year's break. So we're talking about a time bomb in 2026, not today. So we've been tracking our workforce across all of our projects.
Yeah.
It's easier on our construction projects for the last 2 years. So we're able to collect through, you know, the security systems, everyone who comes on the site, where they work, so where they travel from, and what's their nationality. And broadly, when we started tracking this, we were having a total site workforce, average daily 8,000, today it's 11,000 on our southeast of England sites.
Yeah.
The percentage have not changed in 2 years.
And what roughly is the percentage of EU?
50% is foreign workers,
right.
40% EU.
Right.
And that percentage has not changed.
Right, right. Just on the tier ones, you know, and some of the bigger tier twos probably do get the whole Brexit situation. Do you think everyone gets it? Or are people are coming late to it now? Do you think people are starting to get the potential sort of severity of it?
I don't think a lot of small, medium enterprises have the resources to deal with this.
Mm.
I mean, there is so much legislation that gets thrown at the SMEs, you know, haven't got time to turn up to these events. So they don't know what they don't know.
Okay. A final point, if there is a no-deal Brexit, do you think we might see headlines in maybe 12, 18 months' time of, say, some firms blaming a no-deal Brexit for going bust?
I hope no one goes bust. It's inevitable people are going to blame Brexit for something.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's diverting your attention to worrying about whether you're going to be delivering your projects on time.
Yeah.
Or you are actually late on your projects and you're in a dispute trying to recover sums money for whatever reason, and that will ripple through the whole supply chain. I think there will be casualties. let's hope we can all work together to try and minimise those.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Noble Francis. I'm Economics Director at the Construction Products Association and a Professor of Construction Economics at Bartlett.
So, Noble, the Construction Products Association recently downgraded their forecast for construction output for this year from 2.3% growth to 0.3%. Could you talk us through some of the assumptions behind your forecast? And obviously you must have been doing some sort of scenario planning because there are myriad options, but you've probably, you know, refined that down to a few scenarios that you think are probable and are the basis for your assumptions. Could you talk us through that?
In terms of our forecasts, our construction forecasts that were published this week are based upon the assumption that either the Prime Minister's revised deal gets through Parliament, which is unlikely at this point, given the extent at which the Prime Minister lost her vote on the Brexit withdrawal agreement and her unwillingness to revise the deal significantly, or our forecasts are based upon the assumption of a delay to Article 50. Now, a delay to Article 50 is not ideal, but it at least gives us a degree of certainty in the short term.
Okay, so actually when we were looking at your downgraded forecast, that was best case scenario. That's quite worrying.
It is, but if you think about it, at least it means construction activity remains broadly flat over this year, growing by only 0.3%. But it depends heavily which sectors you're involved in. If you're involved in private housing, we're still expecting growth. If you're involved in infrastructure, we're still expecting growth. If you're involved in industrial warehouses and ports, we're expecting growth, and if the higher the uncertainty, the higher the demand for warehouses and ports.
Okay, so demand might shift slightly, but there's definitely some... I mean, which are the sectors that you think are going to feel the pinch?
I think the sectors that are likely to feel the pinch over the next 12 to 18 months are the sectors that have already been hit by that Brexit uncertainty. These are the sectors that are highly reliant upon high investment up front for a long-term rate of return. So you're looking at commercial offices, towers, particularly in London, in which the demand is from the financial sector, where there's obviously a lot of uncertainty regarding Brexit. Other sectors affected, industrial factories, where you're looking at demand from the manufacturing sector of the economy. And then the other key sector that would be affected is prime residential, where you're investing, primarily international investors looking to invest in high-end residential, a lot of which is in London, on the basis that you can keep it for a few years and then sell it on as an investment asset.
So can you tell us what your no-deal scenario is?
We do have a no-deal scenario, but it is a very, very clearly a no-deal scenario, not a forecast. So it only takes account of the direct impacts, and because of that, it may be slightly on the optimistic side. What it would imply, only taking account of the direct effects, would be a 4.2% fall in construction output this year, and then a 2% fall in construction output in 2020. Now that, again, you end up with the biggest impacts in the second quarter, after we leave with no deal, and then the third quarter as we adjust to the new situation. But that 4% fall in construction output this year and 2% fall in construction output next year is highly mixed across the different construction sectors, as you can imagine. What we would expect is that the biggest impacts would be on the commercial sector, again, where it's high investment up front for a long-term rate of return. Private housing, which is obviously highly reliant upon the financial sector for mortgage lending, but then also lending for house builders to purchase land, and highly dependent upon the consumer and their willingness to purchase. On the positive side, you would expect a boost to industrial warehouses construction, and you would expect an increase in the demand for construction works and expansions at ports and harbours.
Okay, so although it looks alarming, it's a mixed picture, so some pockets will do better than others.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So from a sort of products materials perspective, what are the materials that you see are most affected by this just-in-time delivery to site scenario where we could have problems at UK borders?
In terms of specific products, if you look at the basic construction materials that are imported, then the most imported basic material is timber. And 92% of the softwood timber that we import comes from the EU. If you look post-EU referendum, depreciations in sterling meant that we had 15 to 20% price rises in the year after the referendum. And if we ended up with a no-deal scenario, you could end up with depreciations again of that extent, which means price inflation, often on projects that have been signed up to a couple of years ago, which hasn't built in this inflation, at a time when margins are not very good. And that's even outside of the issues around what happens about the availability of goods and when there are delays.
So for a product like softwood timber, we're talking about sort of a double whammy of, if there's a no deal, you've got depreciation in sterling, which is going to inflate costs, but you've also got delays, which could inflate costs because you can't guarantee the just-in-time delivery. You're going to have to think about stockpiling somewhere, or you're going to have some sort of plan, which is going to cost money.
Especially at a time where it's very difficult to get haulage and logistics to quote for pricing around the time of Brexit, because they themselves don't know what the cost of the haulage is going to be. So it's not just the rise in the cost of the product that may occur because there's been increased stockpiling, so there's been increased demand, the increase in price if there were to be a depreciation in sterling, but also the increase in cost on the haulage side as well. So it could actually be a triple whammy.
Does the CPA have a line in terms of how to advise your association members, or is it really just to be aware of all of these potential scenarios and look at your own business model and see how you can maybe stockpile or talk to your suppliers, get agreements in place?
We've been saying to product manufacturers and distributors over the past 18 months that they need to be looking at their supply chains, looking at how they could address potential issues around this. But in terms of stockpiling, some manufacturers clearly have been stockpiling over the last 6 to 9 months. Some firms aren't able to stockpile. They may not be able to stockpile because they may be selling all their product that they're producing at the moment, especially if they're in a growing sector such as private house building outside of London, if they're involved in some infrastructure projects, so they don't have the ability to stockpile. Some firms have materials used in the production where it only has a shelf life of 5 to 7 days, in which case, again, stockpiling isn't possible. And for other firms, it may be difficult to justify stockpiling given that other countries have construction sectors that are growing considerably at the moment and they can export and sell globally as it is.
Well, the client's concern is clarity.
Here's Richard Steer, Chairman of International Consulting
at Gleeds. Plans when they actually know what the ground rules are. But unfortunately at the moment, we're living in a time where nobody actually knows what is going to be happening, almost on a daily basis. And so clients are particularly concerned about supply of materials. They're worried about increase in costs, delays to their projects, shortage of labour, I was with a housing company that I'm a non-executive director for the other day, and they physically cannot get the four bricklayers that they need to build some of their houses. So we're already seeing a shortage, and that's before it becomes exacerbated by the Brexit deal or no deal.
So for that house builder in particular, are they saying that because of all the uncertainty, there just aren't enough workers here to fulfil that work?
I think there's two causes for it. There's the root cause of shortage of labour within our industry anyway, or of skilled labour, and that is considerably exacerbated by the Brexit possibility, and people who have been working in our industry returning to their particular countries of origin because it's not so appealing anymore to be in the UK.
Okay, so there's a sort of a delivery problem already. So how is that manifesting, affecting their decisions to invest?
Yeah, okay, well, there's two. And in continuing projects, clients are trying to rather cheekily put in Brexit clauses. And that is quite difficult to implement, and I think it's very unfair on the contractors who are already complaining, just in the general run-of-mill life, that they are being asked by clients to carry too much risk. And for a client to try and shift Brexit risk onto a contractor, which he didn't price for in the first place, I think is grossly unfair. So that's on continuing projects. On new startups, we're seeing an awful lot of delays in people starting. And if you've got a major investment to make into a capital expenditure project, you're going to wait until you know the framework within which you're developing. And people are just putting projects on hold. You can't do that once you've started. You have to continue and try and mitigate the difficulties. But otherwise, just wait. And even if we get an extension on the Article 50 time, that's actually going to make the problem worse, because people will be waiting for an even longer period. And we are seeing people who are saying, well, no, I will go and put my money into Spain, into France, into Germany, and develop my product there, rather than doing it in the UK.
So for the pipeline of work, you know, when we're talking about that coming through in, you know, 2 to 3 years' time, the best scenario for the sector as a whole would be that Theresa May's deal somehow gets through.
Whatever Theresa May's plan B is, if it involves separating from Europe, people will go and invest in Southern Ireland, they'll invest in continental Europe, and we're already seeing indigenous businesses moving out. We've got the aerospace example, we've got problems with Jaguar Land Rover, and we as an industry are larger than those two put together, but we are seeing businesses relocating to continental Europe. So there's less domestic demand for products. Therefore, investors, we might see an increase in standing asset purchasing because of the devaluation of the pound. But even that, talking to some colleagues in the general practice industry, we haven't seen a particular increase in activity in people buying it. So I think the danger is that the UK will become the poor outside man of Europe.
OK, so obviously the summit on Monday is going to be looking at a range of scenarios. Have you, as a business, thought about the impact on project costs in kind of the scenario of no deal?
We can very easily see project costs increasing by 15%. It's not only the cost increase, it's the time that they take because of the lack of availability of labour and a reduction in demand.
In terms of on a sort of company basis, how much time would you say Gleeds spends, like, contingency planning for Brexit?
Yeah.
How much of your time as chairman is spent thinking about Brexit, having to deal with the possible outcome?
Well, we've already seen a downturn in the commercial sector, very much in London, but also across the country. So, therefore, you can spend your time, or the company can spend the time, worried about the fee flow, the cash flow, the income that's being generated. Now, to a large extent, public sector work is making up for that shortfall, but we need a vibrant commercial sector to our industry. So therefore, quite a bit of time, and it's wasted energy, is spent worrying about either the future impact of Brexit or the current impact of Brexit on businesses as a whole. And I don't think it's right that politicians should be able to hold business, who are the only wealth generators for this country, to hostage over, well, we might not do a deal for Brexit, and then you guys have to get on with it. I think that's politics just for the sake of politics. It's completely unacceptable.
OK, so we've touched on how sites might find that they just don't have enough workers. Mm. Do you think that's very connected with the depreciation of sterling?
I think, particularly if we go out on a no-deal Brexit and sterling could collapse by 10% quite easily, we've already seen a bit of a downturn in it. The impact on labour will be significant. There's wonderful infrastructure plans, HS2, Heathrow Airport expansion, millions of houses needed, Hinkley Point, all this sort of stuff, and the power stations. But we're just not going to have the people around to do them. That will put the prices up. Put the prices up, everybody will grumble that public sector infrastructure projects are taking longer than they should do and costing more money, which is just back into the old cycle, and it's been exacerbated significantly by this Brexit issue.
So I know that the industry gets a bit of a kicking for not being very good at training their own and recruiting their own, and obviously for not modernising its techniques so that we can produce things more efficiently.
I can understand that argument, and I think we as an industry do have to take responsibility for the fact that we haven't been training people properly over the years to fill a skills gap. However, people within the UK really don't necessarily want to do that sort of work, and we're finding a lot of the kids coming out of schools would far rather do different cleaner professions rather than developing a construction trade. So you can't magic people out of nowhere. And okay, we haven't invested particularly in technological developments. I would think the industry is one of the last ones to go through disruptive technology. You've seen the contractors' margins over the years diminish and diminish and diminish, and we haven't created an environment where they have the opportunity to invest in technology because of the client's requirement to always accept the lowest price, which means that we don't have the money for training, for skills development, or for investment into modern technology.
So basically you're saying we can't change fast enough?
There is no way that we can change fast enough to make up this problem. There will be a big hole in one form or another after March the 29th.
Keep up to date with the latest from the Brexit Summit on our website, building.co.uk, where you can also sign up for breaking news alerts. Make sure you're subscribed to receive Building Podcasts so you'll be the first to hear future episodes. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining us.